Hello and welcome to Nerd's Eye View. Or Matt, what would you call this?
Nerd's Eye View.
What kind of Nerd's Eye View is it?
Oh, it's the revision of the review of the Nerd's Eye View.
It's a very special episode.
It's a very special episode. I can't say special correctly.
Nope.
No.
So what we are going to do here, what you will hear in a moment, is an old review. And then after that, you'll hear our new review.
And you'll know it's old because the audio quality, not so good.
I'm going to do my best to clean it up, but I'm just going to keep apologizing.
It's crisp not... like vinyl.
Yeah. But this, the reason why you're hearing an old review is because all those episodes are no longer online.
On the internet. The internet went down. If you're hearing this, it's down.
Don't cause mass panic. So please enjoy this review of Attack the Block.
So what do we start off with?
First, we must start off with our movie review of the week. We all saw a little ditty called Attack the Block.
Directed by Joe Cornish.
Who is Joe Cornish?
Produced by a group.
Joe Cornish was the guy who used to do morning radio in England. Then he did the Adam and Joe show. And then has worked with Edgar Wright on numerous projects such as Shaun the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Mm-hmm. This is his first directorial movie, though.
I'm glad to see you've stepped your game up from when we were sitting in the theater and after the credits, and I said, didn't he work on Hot Fuzz? And you're like, no.
He didn't work on it. He was in it.
He's also going, he's one of the co-writers for
Tintin.
The Adventures of Tintin. Ooh. Coming out this December, right? Excited about that.
Along with the Muppet guy.
Stephen Moffat.
Yeah.
You're just confusing the issue, Tom, with that.
Moffat's a poppet?
No.
Is he a poppet?
Warning for people who actually want to go see this film, we do sometimes dip into mild spoilers.
Allow it.
Just a tiny bit.
There's one of them. There's a dialogue spoiler.
There's something that Tom posted on his Tumblr.
So who wants to go first? Alright, Tom, explain what Attack the Block is.
Attack the Block is about a bunch of hoods that live in this little area called The Block. And all
in
of a sudden...
London.
In London. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's the Ends, if you want to get very specific.
South London.
It's the Ends, and pretty much they live in this block, and they're a bunch
South
of...
South London...
Let me get through the rest of this.
They don't have any good football teams, I don't think. Because all the northern ones, like Chelsea and Arsenal,
can I
Tottenham.
Get through the description?
No, Chelsea's not in the north. Never mind.
Anyway, they live in this block, and then...
I talked about the freaking soccer drama on the last episode.
I have a
Why
feeling
can't I just keep the theme of soccer going?
This would be like if that Doug Hates Movies thing, right?
Yeah. And then pretty much they murk people and steal money and cars and stuff, and then all of a sudden these aliens start falling from the sky, and it's all about trying to protect the block from the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple.
I'll start.
You want to start? Go ahead.
Sure. The only guy that didn't join us.
I went at a later time than
we should say that we saw this at the Arclight Theater in the Hollywood.
Very enjoyable theater.
Yeah, but the water was shit for $4.
And so Tom and I, on like 5 hours of sleep, caught the 9 a.m. showing, which is very rare. Caught the 9 a.m. showing. We drove up to L.A. for about an hour. I had my coffee and donuts.
Followed by a Palm Wonderful car.
Yes, on the way home, there was a Palm Wonderful car that was behind us. And so we went to the Arclight, which is it's one of those fancy theaters up in Hollywood.
With reserved seating.
Yes.
That always blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you think, Andrew?
I was going to say something about the Arclight. Oh, one of the things that I really enjoy about the Arclight is that the crowd is very different there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you generally get people who are actually really love their movies that they're seeing. They're not just sort of like, oh, it's a popcorn flick. I'll just come and waste 2 hours and we'll do whatever and play on my cell phone.
You've seen how many movies there to qualify that statement?
Two, but one of them
was the first one?
Midnight in Paris.
Exactly.
With a huge crowd. That was amazing.
Yes, but people that see Woody Allen movies typically like movies and know things about movies. People that are seeing Attack the Block know things about movies, or at least they know the genre they like.
Well, that's the thing. We see movies at Attack or at the Arclight that are these, like, films that are more for that crowd, and I like that better, because if we tried to, if they had
what if he saw Transformers there? It'd just be a bunch of knuckleheads going, oh, man, I can't wait to give him my money.
In fairness, there was a Captain America standee in the lobby.
Captain America's a really good film. I don't know what people have against it.
But if it's a mainstream film, can play there. Surely Transformers can play. They're both mainstream films.
But here's the thing that I really enjoy.
Not mainstream.
If you bring a baby into the Arclight, you have to pay full price for it.
You stab the baby. They do it there. It's weird.
I love it. It discourages people from bringing their screaming children to a really good film. So, which was what Attack the Block was. It was really good. Here's the thing. This is a funny thing. I walked in expecting a comedy. I had no idea what this movie was about. I was like, oh, this is going to be, like, really funny. It's from that Edgar Wright guy. He's really funny. And
he only produced it.
I knew that, but I was like, ah, he wouldn't produce something that isn't what he himself would really like to do or whatever. And
he wouldn't attach his name to shite like Michael who?
Die?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means.
Okay, he wouldn't attach his name
to
shit.
Yeah. Y'all pronounced everything funny. It scared me.
Die is not that Bob pronunciation.
Anyway, so I was sort of expecting, like, a really, like, comedy thing, and it turned out to be more like a horror film with lots of comedy in it, but I still really enjoyed it. It was a bit gruesome at times. You saw a lot of gory things. And I was
really?
Like, oh wow. I'm sorry, when somebody's face is torn off, I consider that gore.
Yeah, but
you would have fainted in The Horseman.
Yeah, but you're glorifying one little scene that I don't felt was a good representation.
And we see someone's head get blown off, and we get to see someone's head torn off and thrown in the air.
That seems very soft core, though.
Someone's leg is bitten. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, it's got a little
these
gore
are
in
gory
it.
Elements in this film that I didn't expect to see, but I still really enjoyed it, and I felt they fit very well. Especially the design of the aliens were very interesting. You know, Donkey Kong with glow-in-the-dark fangs, nice. There you go.
Well, they explained it really well in the movie.
Yeah,
so they're gorillas with piranha face.
Sure.
That's exactly what they look like.
And I love that they was glow-in-the-dark fang. Like, it was really crazy.
Yes.
They're really terrifying. And the reason for the aliens being there, I really enjoyed. Because I'm very much tired of they're here for our resources. I'm so tired of that. So, so tired.
Because we've already exhausted all
exactly.
Our
what do we
here.
Have? We have water, and it's full of salt, okay? Mm-hmm. If you can figure
and
out how to get the salt out of it, if you can figure out how to get the crap out of our oceans, good luck to you, aliens. But otherwise, you're going to have to drink it straight.
And I don't think you want the gold from our pirates just, arr!
Exactly. So, I mean, I really, Attack of the Block was surprisingly good. I didn't, and especially after reading you two loving it up all over Facebook, I was like, the odds of all three of us enjoying this film just
I said one comment.
Low. One very, very high praise comment.
That is true, yes.
Like, you didn't even try and just say, like, oh, it was really good. No, you said, what did you say, man?
Said I paid $13.50 for Ticket at the Arc Galaxy, Attack the Block. It's well worth it, easily best movie of the year so far.
And now tell us what you think.
Here's my philosophy on movies. I have two things. One, there's two things I look for when I go to see movies. One, it's got to make me feel something. Like, either empower me or just make me get something out of it that kind of like changes my mindset in a positive way. If you're not going to do that, you better have some cool action and some good fight choreography and just slim down the dialogue, please. Mm-hmm. And this film did a little bit of both. More of the former than the latter. But like, fucking hell, I love this movie. Like, I loved this movie. The only thing I knew, I thought both Simon Pegg and, why do we always forget his
Nick
name?
Frost.
Nick Frost.
Oh.
I thought both Simon Pegg and Nick Frost were going to be in it, and you didn't see Nick Frost for a while in the movie, at least a good 30 minutes, and you finally see that he's in it, but I forgot that he was even in it, because I love the kids, I love the girl, the main, or the female in it.
Oh, are we talking about the kids or, like, the pro guy?
Pro guy?
I don't know what the little kid's name was. Like, the one that's working?
Oh, Mayhem and...
Mayhem, yeah. And I can't remember the other kid's name. No. Well, I loved the teenagers, but they're young. Because you see that towards the end when she goes into his room and she sees what it's decorated in.
Yeah. And she says, how old are you?
Yeah. but it does like everything. It has cool monster stuff, and I hate alien invasion movies, but they do this alien invasion thing right. You know, I don't want to spoil what the aliens are there for, but the way they look is not stupid. They're like, they don't even really make them look like anything. They're just really dark, and all you can see is their eyes, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
and you see their teeth.
Yeah,
not their eyes.
And you see their teeth. No, you see their eye. Well, you see their teeth first. You see their and eyes. Yes, you do, because their eyes are blue.
Their teeth are blue.
You see their eyes.
I don't remember.
At
their
the
eyes.
Beginning, when
are you talking about the first alien?
Yeah,
the first alien you could probably see the eyes of. I don't want to explain why.
No,
now.
And then the first two when they're in the cop van. But they have eyes. I understand that, but they have eyes.
I like whispering.
Okay, that's dumb. Anyways, that's really dumb.
Because half the things. Okay, whatever.
But
anyway, just continue.
Thank you. Like, it's pretty much like, you know, when you see other movies and like they always cut, like you only see glimpses of the monster or the alien. You only see glimpses of them, and then finally towards the end you actually see what it looks like, and you're just like, oh, that's what the alien is, and whatever. These, like, even when you do see them, it's just like, oh, they're kind of ferocious, but they don't put you off in any kind of way. And I mean, I loved, for anyone that loves English slang, like, I love the dialogue in this. Some of the word choices that they use, and it's just common for English slang, but I love it because it's just fun to hear, and I like the way that they describe things in it. Some of the action is cool, like with the kids defending themselves, and they defend themselves in a practical manner. Like, it's, they just depend on themselves and things
I love
that kids
the,
would have.
When we get the cuts to them running into each of their places and grabbing something to defend themselves with.
And to me, there was really nothing wrong with this movie. Like, I love every part of it, and I want to see it again and again.
Yeah.
And the thing that breaks my heart is I'm not going to drive up to LA to see this fucking movie again.
Yeah, should get wide release, if now we're gonna start writing to our people.
Yes. Tom?
Yeah. I think you summed it up best when we were walking out and you said, suck it, Super 8.
Yeah, suck it, Super 8. These kids are a lot cooler than your kids.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed this movie. For one, I enjoyed the bridge sling. I actually enjoyed the performances and the costumes and the practical use of fireworks and
Oh god, fireworks were awesome.
Yeah. Which fireworks? The ones in the air or ones boom, boom, boom?
All of them.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I felt it was practical. I liked that essentially had this drug dealer who was so badass until the very end.
Right.
I really enjoyed it. And then the soundtrack was amazing.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And so you mentioned it. Like, I mean, I love the basement jacks.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I forgot to mention about this movie, is just the music. I love it the whole time. Anytime you have a KRS-One song in your movie, I'll go check it out at least, or it's going to be somewhat good for me.
Oh, definitely.
Another thing I forgot to mention, the main kid, Moses, through his performance, like, he, and, you know, he really reminded me of, like a young Denzel Washington.
Sure.
I don't know. Like, him, not the actor being good. But whatever.
But yeah, I enjoyed the music. I felt it really made the atmosphere more fun. And made me want to go listen to some grime music for some reason. That's a different story.
It reminded me of, like John Carpenter type music.
I haven't listened to much John Carpenter, so I don't know.
You mean John and the Carpenters?
No. Yeah, I pretty much can't say anything new. It was really good. I enjoyed it. It was fast-paced and fun. The characters were authentic, and that's what made me love them more.
It didn't feel long at all. You know, it's a really short movie, a little over 90 minutes or whatever.
Kind of weird. I had simultaneous reactions that I wanted to see what happens, but I didn't want the scene that was going on to really end.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so King's Speech, you know, was my favorite movie last year. Had these two movies came out in the same year, Attack of the Block would be the King's Speech, hands down. And I love King's Speech because it did the first thing that I described, like, in my philosophy, is that it made me feel something. You know, he overcame a problem that he had, and I love the language in that movie. And of course, it's a period piece, so that was even more for me. Like, in this movie, you know, all the kids overcome their label of just being hoods, and they learn something about themselves, and they better themselves. And you know, it teaches you that you can make mistakes in life, but there are ways to make things right and make your mark. And that's, you know, yeah, okay. Freaking, I love this movie.
I don't know if it's going to be my favorite of the year, but it's definitely made some strong competition.
Yeah, and so that breaks my heart that you love Super more than Attack the Block.
No, it's tough because I love them almost the same, but I just have to rewatch Attack the Block to make a fair assessment.
Hey, but you saw Super.
Yeah.
And then you saw Attack the Block, and you said Super was your best or favorite movie so far this year.
Yeah, but it's a tough choice. I have to give both a chance, man. So there's more going for Attack the Block to be number one, but it's going to be interesting. I haven't seen Super in a while, so we're going to find out.
Anything else, Tom?
Not on that issue, but I really like it. If you haven't seen it, go see it. And if you haven't seen it, just go ahead and tell your local theater chain to fuck Travel with Aliens and put Attack the Block on the
set. Yeah, please do that.
Alright, so now we're going to take a look, another look, at Attack the Block.
A looky look?
Yeah. What do you remember anything that was happening during that review?
No. I have to apologize. My gosh, do I sound foolish when I actually go back and watch that? Like, because this is the only time I've seen it since the theater, since seeing it mm-hmm. 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, not just driving to LA was a burden, but you know, just picking it up on video was a burden as well for
mm-hmm.
me. But okay, they don't have eyes. They don't have eyes.
You forgot about that?
Them golems don't have eyes.
No, it's their glowing teeth.
They're glowing teeth.
But yeah, it is. It's just an intimidating look.
Yes.
I think overall. Tom, I love how in that old review you mentioned that Joe Cornish is known for the Adam and Joe show.
Oh, yeah, because really, what else was he known for at the time?
Pretty much nothing. And now he's rumored to be the director of Star Trek 3.
And Snow Crash and a whole bunch of other stuff.
So he might be coming up in the world.
Yeah. But he's given us Tintin, and he's given us... Or he's going to give us Ant-Man,
he
right?
He co-wrote Tintin, and he's co-writing Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
And in the review, I mentioned how I was excited for Tintin. Which,
are you still
and
excited
I saw
for
it,
Tintin?
And I still love it.
Yeah.
It's
and
great
it got
stuff.
Robbed of an Oscar.
Pretty much.
No, he's better than... what's that French one that you
Uggy?
Like? Uggy there. That's... I wanted to call him Ugg.
Hey, we need to do a whole special on that.
Yeah, there you go. Dog versus dog.
Yeah. Matt, in the old review, you said it was the best movie of the year so far for you. Do you remember what other movies came out that year?
No. Give me a list. Hurry up.
And I love how you mentioned you had two film rules. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do remember that.
And I wrote them down because they're actually pretty great.
Yeah. I felt something.
They gotta make you feel something,
uh-huh.
and or have cool action.
Yes, with,
and I think
with
that
no talking, very little
stays
talking.
True for everything you've ever seen.
Yeah,
I think I can now predict what you'll think about movies. I'm now gonna Netflix you. You know how Netflix predicts what you think.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's interesting, and I think this was so early in the show that you were trying to insert soccer as a running gag for you.
Probably. I don't discount that at all.
Because you mentioned somewhere in the review that it was part of your ongoing soccer drama.
Yeah, apparently I'm dramatizing soccer. they did over there on the BBC or something. They had one of those novella type shows, but it was related to soccer. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Soccer Wives, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Or Footballer Wives.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
I remember this. And
so that was Attack the Block.
Well, I also think it's interesting if we can now look at it from from the distance that we are of time, that a lot of people were comparing it to Super 8. Do you think that's still a fair comparison?
By the fact that they were both movies that came out around the same time and dealt with supernatural themes, yes.
And children.
And children.
And that both directors would go on to do Star Trek.
And children.
Ew.
Please can't forget about the children. I didn't mean it like that.
But I think Attack the Block was more in the genre of like a horror comedy. Like,
yeah.
It really is a throwback to late 70s, early 80s horror comedies in a way that Super 8 was kind of like an updated E.T.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Super 8, nobody died in Super 8. It was a bloodless film.
No, yeah, like
people were seemingly attacked in that film, but in Attack the Block, it's very much like this. There are stakes and things bad happen here.
Right. Like, I'm not saying that, or I won't say that. Like, it's comparable to those, like, late 70s, early 80s, like, slasher horror movies where there's usually kind of terrible, cheesy jokes, and then there's people getting offed. Which, okay, after a second viewing, are you still shocked by the gore in this?
Well, I think because at the time, like I said, all I thought was that it was a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand. I didn't know exactly what it was about, but I thought, oh, this sounds good. And yeah, I mean, now I look at the gore from that perspective. That is the genre that it's in.
Mm-hmm.
It's evoking the imagery of those horror films because that's what it is essentially. Like I think the because the scene that I still think is, I don't know, the when you see Hi-Hat's face get ripped off by the monsters.
Yes,
that I think is referencing something directly. I think one of the Night of the Living Dead films. I can't remember if it's Day of the Dead, one of those others, where someone gets eaten like that by
zombies.
Come on,
zombie man, you're supposed to know these things.
But yeah, it's definitely it's there for the stakes.
And to me, like the horror in it, it reminds me of a very light, like a lighthearted version of like those early John Carpenter movies, mm-hmm. You know, where the creatures themselves are not the impressive thing. You know, I mean, sure, this movie's made, you know, 20 plus years later, but they use real costumes. They use like real effects.
Yeah.
And
it still looks impressive.
Yes.
Right?
And they get the most out of it. You're terrified when you see them. Although after seeing them a second time and you can hit pause, because, you know, you hit pause to go to the bathroom or something, you're like, oh, wait, I paused on the opening scene, right? When they, you know, see the first creature. And it's like, oh, there's probably like a zipper behind that or something. The dog inside, I don't know.
Jeez.
Someone's unprofessional.
Okay, so let's dive into the film as a whole. It's written and directed by Joe Cornish. And I have all the other cast here. I'll mention them as they come up.
Did that one guy go on to do that Mike Tyson thing?
Oh, yeah. It got like 3.9 on IMDb.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
What?
The Remember, John like, Boyega did, what was it?
The Brick, what? Right?
Yeah.
Remember there was like, shortly after Attack the Block came out, there was news that he was going to star in like some Mike Tyson, not documentary, but...
In the in IMDb,
biopic?
It looked like it came out before.
Did it really?
I'm
going to search this again.
No, because that news came out after we saw Attack the Block.
I thought it was also a short. Maybe I just saw Brick and I thought, oh, they're just ripping off Brick.
Don't. No one rips off Brick. I'll cut everyone. I'll cut them. I'm in a cut now.
Brick is a good film. Yeah, I was very surprised when I looked at John Boyega's IMDb page to see that he's not in a ton more things.
None of them really are, right?
Yeah, that's bummed me. I was like, oh, I want to see where these guys go. In fact, I was secretly hoping that they would make a cameo in The World's End, but that didn't go anywhere.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a TV movie. That's why I discredited it.
Because you discredit TV?
I just thought, oh, TV movie.
Or movies on television.
Yeah, it did come out. It came out later that year. John Boyega should have, you know, had a bunch of movies lined up. Oh, Spike Lee did Debrick. What do I know?
Yeah, you don't know anything. That's what we've been telling you for 2 years now.
Anyway. Yeah, what? I mean, that is surprising, right?
Right.
Yeah, that none of these guys are anyone,
Joe Cornish.
Yeah.
He hasn't done a film since this one. I think he's got one coming out next year that isn't Star Trek 3. But
And the thing with Joe Cornish to me that is I think, like, he did this on his own without his buddies, you know?
Well, Nick Frost was there.
Well, Nick Frost was there, but, like, no one helped him co-write it. Well, none of them helped him co-write it. He directed it, and I'm sure maybe, you know, Simon Pegg or Edgar Wright were maybe on set for a little bit or something like that, but this was his thing.
You know, it's funny because it seems that they have very similar senses of humor. You know, Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish, because in this film, there's a couple of those moments that are in the Cornetto trilogy where someone says something and then later on it comes true, but in a way that you maybe weren't expecting.
Like the pheromone thing impressed me. It's like all of a sudden I'm watching and didn't realize that. It's like, oh, that's kind of coming to play later.
That was super great. And when Pest goes back to his house to get the baseball bat, he goes in pretending to limp.
Yeah.
So that he can sneak the baseball bat out in his pant leg. And that's the leg that gets hurt. And he ends up actually having to limp on that leg. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we loved in the Cornetto trilogy. And here it is. Another writer is doing, like, a similar sense of humor.
And, I mean, like, I think there's kind of, like, visual cues, too. When, I think it's towards the beginning, when they scale up the apartment complex, and it kind of slowly, not like zooms in or anything, but, like, it slowly kind of recognizes the open window with the curtain coming out, because that's where they go towards the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and this, the block is what they call it. Its name is Wyndham Tower.
Sounds it's fancy.
I mean, I think it very much applies into that. Like some people talk about setting as a character, and I think that this apartment complex is really interesting just on its own.
Certainly, the apartment complex, it's very like desolate and eerie, and certainly like a place that you wouldn't want to live. But there are a mixture of like cultures, and I would even say class, that like live in it. Which is something like that Moses says towards the end, like, hey, had we known that you lived here, we wouldn't have messed with you.
Yeah.
Which is something I like, that, you know, it's kind of like, what do you call it? When, if I do this stuff with my hands, do you guys understand it all?
Yeah. I'm getting it. Got it.
Like it's more of, regardless of class or whatever, it's more of, oh, you're one of us in our area here, so
respect,
allow it.
Yeah,
and I kind of like that. It was like a subtle message in the movie.
And I also loved, you know, after you watch it, you know everything that happened. So when you watch it again, anticipating, so when the alien crashes on the car, and I know that it's that dude's car. Oh, I laughed.
I totally forgot that it was
so
his
hard.
Car. Yeah.
That was good stuff.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he's like freaking out because his car is all blown up. Oh, man. That guy's funny. That's his character name is Bruce, played by Luke Treadaway. Apparently, he was based on what Joe Cornish was like in his 20s.
Listen to KRS-One.
Yeah. Yeah, I love.
And high.
That's another good
detail.
Hang
out in weed rooms.
Whenever he had his headphones in and we were watching him, we'd hear whatever music he
was
listening to.
Oh, yes. I noticed that the second time around. Like when he, where was he?
He was waiting at the elevator the first time.
And then there was another scene where
he was
like,
walking to the car.
Yeah.
There was another, and then I think there was a third time.
And you can still hear the music, very faint.
Yeah. But he pulls it out of his ear and then it goes down.
Yeah. I like that. That was
a neat little
cool
trick.
Did you, okay, like going into it, I remember you said something like that. You knew nothing about the movie.
I knew it was a comedy somehow, but I don't. It's not a
hysterical
comedy. It's a.
Does the opening scene kind of throw you guys, where you just see a bunch of, like, if you know nothing about this movie, you just see a bunch of kids robbing a woman. I think that setting, that opening, to me doesn't depict that we're going to see like a movie where aliens are coming and. You know, and they're scary and the horror elements of it. I don't know.
Well,
seeing a second time, it didn't come off that way to me.
In that same scene, the alien crashes into the car. Like, it happens really quickly.
It does. It does.
They bring it in like right away.
Seeing it the first time, that shocked me. I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was going to happen. I didn't know that this was that kind of movie.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, I think I was a little shocked the first time I saw it, but this time I knew it was coming, and I was able to appreciate, like, this scene was setting, you know, who these people are, and gave you this quick meeting of this woman and this and these kids, so that later on they can re-encounter each other, and so that she can, like, seek them out, like when Moses gets arrested. I think that was, like, a really smart move in the screenplay, mm-hmm. because they don't have anywhere to go at that point. So it's like, oh yeah, arrest Moses. Then we have more trouble for the kids. Like, they know how to build the trouble in a way where it keeps the plot moving.
Right.
And I thought that was a... And also bringing in the cops at that moment so that the danger could not just affect the kids, but can affect, like, an institution. So that way it'll get noticed on a wider scale. Because later on... we see Hi-Hat's associate driving through that area, and that whole van is blocked off, and it's a police, you know, investigation is going on.
Yeah.
I think it was just very well plotted.
Yeah, like, that's something that was running through my mind right now. This isn't just an average, you know, invasion movie or horror movie. This is, like, carefully put together. I just like the, you know, just like the World's End was not like a typical, you know, comedy or bar, or, you know, beer flick or something like that. It was carefully put together and it had layers, and that's something that I think is now like a stamp of Edgar Wright and a stamp of like Joe Cornish, that these guys obviously know what they're doing, but they pay careful attention to their craft and they respect it.
Yes. And I think what's interesting, that opening scene really shouldn't endear us to these kids.
No.
Because here we're seeing that they're robbing a woman, but I think once you take into account their social situation.
And the fact that, like, when they have their mask on, they're completely different people. They're like, you know, it's like if they had two sides or whatever, they're the enforcers. They're the villains. And then once those masks comes off, they're just kids. Yeah. That's all, you know?
Yeah. And that film, during the film, they reinforce this idea that they are just kids, especially when the woman, Sam, ends up going into Moses's apartment and sees that he still sleeps with, like, Spider-Man sheets.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a kid.
And there was a time before that where... The one kid that got bit, I don't remember his
Pest.
Name. Pest. He says something like, oh, we were just as scared as you were, mm-hmm. you know, or one of them says that. I don't know if it was Pest, but one of them says, hey, we were just as scared as you were. Like, they're kids and they're doing, you know, I guess you would say grown up things, mm-hmm. you know, robbing someone, if I call that being grown up. But it's not something that these, you know, 12 to 15 year old kids should be doing. And they're pulling out weapons and everything like that. And, yeah.
Earlier I mentioned how Super 8 was like a bloodless film. I don't know if you remember some of the scenes where people were quote unquote attacked.
Yeah.
In that film, it was in a kind of a scary way, like it was Jaws-esque, but later on in Super 8 you find out that everyone's just like tied up to a machine or something stupid. in Attack the Block, we have two of the kids are from the main group have, you know, death scenes,
yeah.
where we watch them die. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah.
Were they well done, or were they, was that too far?
No, I think in like the aspect of, it makes sense plot story wise. It makes sense plot story wise. It wasn't done in such a vicious and like gruesome way that you could be shocked or offended by it. I don't know what you think, Tom.
No, I agree with you. It's like, oh, there's stakes here, and if someone dies, that's part of the story. It's not, oh, they all live and it's bloodless. It's like, oh, it's exciting watching these gorilla wolf motherfuckers try and get them.
Yeah, and it just having that happen, it gives the viewer this kind of, well, if one of those kids can die, like we just saw a kid die in a movie. If that kid can die, all of them can die. Who's gonna make it out?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's good for tension, for sure. I always hated in those kinds of films where you can very obviously tell who's gonna make it out mm-hmm. by the end. Riddick comes to mind.
You mean one of the best movies of this year? Riddick? Riddick and Fast Six, Fast and Furious Six.
Oh, boom.
Now we've just dated this podcast.
Okay. Well, that's sad. Well, no, I already did that when I said Joe Cornish was rumored to direct Star Trek. I should have confidently said he directed it, and it was fantastic.
No, exactly. We'll just come back, and you just insert, he directed it. 5 Oscars. Fantastic.
I think that would be the first time a third film in a series would get an Oscar.
Godfather Return of the 2 King.
What?
Return of the King.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
That won everything.
I'm sure Matrix won something like very secondary as far as awards are concerned. go ahead.
But do you have any like favorite characters?
Well, actually, yeah, that's kind of what I was just going to say. Is I don't think last time we ever talked about the girls in the movie, like their female counterparts. I like them a lot, and the one girl that's like, oh, I don't want to be contracting chlamydia. she's funny. Uh-huh. She's like, no, you're always up to trouble. And I don't even know what that is. And her? I've never seen her before. No, don't let them in here. I love her. She's the outspoken one. And she's not even like the main, well, not that this movie had a love interest, but she's not even the guy, girl that loves, like, likes Moses. You know?
Yeah.
It's what's-his-face's cousin or sister.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed also the scene when they do get into the wherever the girls are staying, whatever that apartment is, and like two of the monsters break in, and one of them goes and gets the girls like trapping under the covers and start beating it.
Yeah.
And the other one, the girl like grabs a lamp and just shocks it.
It was awesome.
That was pretty great.
They were just kicking the crap out of that thing.
One of them grab a ski also, like.
No, it was a rollerblade.
Yeah, rollerblade.
Yeah, or an ice skate.
When they had the one under the covers.
Yeah.
That was a.
She was cutting
fun.
Up the ice with that thing.
That's good. And that's when Moses has the katana. He lifts it up and it gets stuck in the wall.
Yeah.
Like that's a good turnaround on like, oh, we've seen him. He can cut. He just slices at their head and they die, and then boom, it's a comedy moment. And then it turns right back around and Sam has to save him.
Exactly. Like he's vulnerable and. And it's kind of like, I guess, maybe her proving to him that, like, hey, you know, we're in this together, and I got you, and I still think you're a jerk for trying to rob me, but, you know. I kind of wanted, like, now, like, thinking about it, now I want, like, more after everyone leaves the tower. I want more. Like, I want to know more about Sam and, like, did she ever contact Moses or something like that? Is there a sequel in the works?
Oh. Well, there was at one point. We talked about it, but that never came through, obviously.
Oh.
Until ATB2. until insert here.
Oh, yeah.
5 Oscars. Loved it.
Yeah. John Boyega is the Daniel Day-Lewis of his generation.
I remember being annoyed by Nick Frost the first time I watched this film.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure why, because the second time I watched it...
Because he kept his Paul hair?
Yeah, he had that long hair. I don't know. I think what I was able to appreciate this time was after, because I had most recently seen him in The World's End, and there he plays a very different character from any of the other characters he'd ever played before. And then here I'm seeing him again back in that same type, and I'm thinking, like, he's good at it. I don't know. Like, he can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
What's Ron's weed room?
He looks like this guy in Attack the or in The World's End, right? He looks like that guy.
Okay,
yeah,
that's a picture during an audio
podcast. His IMDb. Just look at his IMDb page.
Now you've dated us again.
It's a room full of weed.
Because the Internet Movie Database will not be around in like 2 years.
Well, no, in 10 years it'll be a different picture.
No, it'll be the same. I'll
yeah.
It's my life purpose now.
Yeah, okay. Like Shirley Temple never aged according to IMDb.
Oh.
Oh, that just made me think of something else, but. Not about this movie.
What about this? Right.
What about this movie, eh?
Tom, any thoughts I haven't covered here?
Well, I was really obsessed with the music at the time, and I watching this again, it's like, oh, I still really like this score. And it's strange, because I really was into the Basement Jacks aspect, but it was also done by Stephen Price, who did the score for Gravity, which is really interesting, because both are very spacey.
That's cool.
No, and there are... when you get outside of, like, the Basement Jacks sound of it, there are good, like, elemental sounds and environmental, you know, sounds or whatever And not so much like horror cliche music or like sound effects, but they're of the genre. I just think they're utilized properly.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything in particular, but I remember thinking that while watching it the second time.
Yeah, I'm always kind of dumb with like film music because I don't know artists. So I don't ever know, like, oh, they're playing this song.
Well, but, like, the Basement Jacks aren't, like, super popular or anything.
No.
They're just, like, an electronic group.
Yeah.
Kind of like your Chemical Brothers.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
And another embarrassing moment on my part, I still haven't bought the score for this movie.
Oh, wow. I buy, like, within a week.
Yeah, I loved it, and I still, every time I watch, like, half of it again coming over here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, while driving, I had my phone up. I was like watching it. I was like, "What's up, officer?" Allow it. He said, "Respect."
Nice. Burm, burm, burm. Burm, burm, burm.
Yeah, dude. Like it's just really good. I'm gonna go back to John Carpenter again, but like, after watching his movies, he does sound really well. Especially like getting a lot out of basic instruments. Like he uses a bass guitar and he uses it well to create like a, you know, tension.
Mm-hmm.
And there's stuff like that in this movie. But I think like it's kind of neat because it's like a 90-minute film and the stuff with the Basement Jacks kind of keeps it rolling along. Your head's moving to it and you're not as afraid as maybe you should be. And I don't think that's a discredit to the movie at all. Like I don't think you're supposed to be scared or anything like that. I think you're just supposed to enjoy yourself. You know, you have some laughs, there's some good beats, and there's some cool stuff happening in it, some cool action.
Good. As far as I know, Tom's the only one of us that owns this movie.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I bought it when it first came out. I loved it a lot, and I still do. In fact, I recommend to whoever asks me. It's like, when The World's End came out, it's like, I went with friends to the Cornetto Trilogy thing. It's like, oh, you gotta see this before we go. Even though it had nothing to do with it, but figured he better see it eventually.
It's a group of people doing something.
Yeah, so I really would recommend it to almost anyone at this point.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of underrated.
Yeah.
You don't hear it mentioned a lot.
Whenever I think to myself, oh, my dad would like this, I think then that means that I think anyone could watch this movie.
That's a good, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that rating scale.
It is.
Would like.
Dad approved. Kid tested, dad approved.
Even though he'd probably be like, what are they saying? Shiv? Gorilla? What?
Merc? No, that's when you put this... no, my dad wouldn't even read the subtitles. Although, now, see, I want to watch it with subtitles on just to get more of the language because that was something I took away watching it the first time is the slang that they use there. Why am I blanking on the first Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
Oh.
Like, that introduced, like, Cockney rhyme slang to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I just found really interesting. And you know, the slang that they use in Attack the Block, I like it. It's clever. And it's some of it's stuff that, because it's regional, we don't understand, but...
I believe Joe Cornish, according to trivia, IMDb trivia, he, you know, went around and
his
made
podcast brought to you by.
He got real, like real slang.
Yeah.
So he made sure it was like authentic.
Because it's funny watching it a second time. Like I noticed that. I kind of noticed. Okay, this is something Joe Cornish wrote, and this is like slang that he incorporated. And I'm trying to remember the moment specifically. But it's like one of the kids says something, get out of here, they say that in the movie. But they said something and I was like, oh, that's Joe Cornish written and that's not like something they would say. And I can't remember what scene it is now, unfortunately. It's something like, oh, hey, don't worry, we think you're swell, miss.
All right, so thanks for listening to our second look at a classic film. So this has been a special episode of Nerd's Eye View.
Hey, thanks to JuiceTin for our theme song. Please rate and review us on iTunes, and you can find us at nevpodcast.com or benviewnetwork.com/ NEV.
This podcast is a part of the Benview Network.
You can find this and other podcasts like it at BenviewNetwork.com.